I have talked to so many of you for 9 months about this journey that we have been on, that today marks the end of that journey in a steady sense, where we've since September explored the lives of people of faith, a whole bunch of people who did a whole bunch of stuff, and they did it by faith. They were real people like you and me, flesh and blood. They were born of a mom. In some cases, the dad was still there. In other cases, he wasn't. But they all had a mom, and they grew up, and they grew up in good circumstances and in bad, really bad circumstances. They're different in almost every way. The ones that fill the page and a half of people in Hebrews chapter 11. If you're new, then you need to go back and just go on our website, and you can hear any message throughout this series by faith. But these people, they were different in almost every way you can imagine. Men, women, young, old, smart, and somewhat simple. Just a whole gamut of people. But what they had in common was that they believed God. They believed God. Some of them did things by faith. All of them are there because of that. But some of them did those things by faith that spanned a lot of years. I think of Noah, right? Early in the list. His story spans 120 years where he built an ark in the face of opposition. People saying stupid things about this weirdo, this wacko. What are you doing? Boat? Flood? Are you kidding me? You're nuts. I mean, just the jeering, when the Bible describes the kind of, you know, ridicule, that's what it sounds like when people are going, you're cracked. You're weird, right? 120 years in his case. A whole lot less time in the case of the parents of Moses. You remember their names? Amram and Jochebed. Hi, this is my dad and mom, Amram and Jochebed. That's weird. But anyway, that's their names. And they did something that only lasted 3 months that we know of, where they hid their son. Because they knew that the king in that day was a Pharaoh, was anti-Jewish and committed to destroying all firstborn, all Jewish boys. So here he is, a sitting duck. And his mom and dad do something that's extraordinary. They put it all on the line and they hide their son for 3 months. Then comes somebody that who made the haul for one day, not 120 years or 3 months, one day. Actually, more correctly, one night. Spies were detected as Joshua had sent them in to this new land and to a city in particular, Jericho. And they were seen and in their reconnaissance of this city, which God had planned to take out. And so they sought refuge, and they found refuge in the home of a harlot. Her name's Rahab. The Bible makes a point every time it refers to her that she's a harlot. And I began to smile at why, because I think I understand why. And many of you have come to understand why. But she hides them, and that simple act of faith that night, as she hid them from pursuing bad guys in the city, resulted in her salvation and so much more, her permanent inclusion in a list of people who did things by faith. Isn't that cool? That all happened that night, and accuracy in this moment requires that I tell you this too. So you're further sort of drawn into this detail about her life. We went into much greater depth when we came to her in this study, but she actually, if you go to the New Testament and look up the genealogy of Jesus Christ, you will find in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, that she, in fact, is a great, 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 great somebody, grandmother, of Jesus. How about that? And I'm smiling because I'm giving you a further hint of why I so thoroughly enjoyed this journey these past 9 months. I think I would call it again the surprise moves God makes. And I say that makes, it sounds current because it's meant to be. The Bible's full of surprise moves God made, but you and I live today and can expect more of the same. A God that says, you know something? You're bound by math that says 1 + 1 = 2, right? Everybody, are we okay on the math part? All right, it's early, I know, but 1 + 1 = 2, unless God says differently. That would be the asterisk next to the answer. Oh, yeah, you can't break rules. Like, oh, really? Ask a miracle God what you can and can't do. Seriously? So, I mean, who chooses someone like Rahab? Known for something most people disrespect. I believe that's why it's put in plain view. But I tell you who does, God. Who, when he reaches for her, says, look, I'm going to cover you in grace and scrub you clean from your sin, and I'm going to use you in a way that blows you and everybody else that reads about you away. Those that say, oh no, God can only use perfect, pure, complete, totally with it people, are going to look at your story and they're going to say, wow, how does he do that? How did he take someone like a harlot and use her for holy things? Well, God does that kind of stuff. And I hope you take that message to anybody you know that's kicking dirt clods saying, I am out of reach when it comes to God using my life. That's one of the series sort of summaries for me. Or take somebody else like Samson. Who chooses someone like Samson? An embarrassing underachiever, given so much by God and doing so little with what he was given. We didn't hide that because the Bible didn't hide that about him. The Bible goes into saying, look, he's the guy that coulda and shoulda, but didn't. You ever felt that way or know somebody that feels that way? I do. There's one more. I briefed you, I prepped you for the one guy I didn't want to talk about. Remember his name? Jephthah. I think I called him a jerk. Jephthah's a jerk. I don't like him. He made the Hall of Fame. I didn't like talking about him because he was the guy, his story, I think can be summarized, could be a good title for his life, Fool. Okay? Well, you're going, wow, that's kind of harsh. Well, if you weren't here, again, you got to go listen to that. Fool for two reasons, two decisions, terrible decisions he made. The first decision when he was coming home from battle and he said, God, if you give me the victory here against the Ammonite, the Israel's enemy to the east, if you give me this victory, I will give to you the first person that comes out of my home. Not first thing. Some have said, well, maybe he thought his dog would come out. No, not true. And we also know this from reading his story. He had a wife and a daughter. That's it. Pretty good guess. One of those two were going to come out that front door. Sure enough, he comes home, a victorious dad, and his daughter races out to cheer triumphantly. Dad's back, and he beat the bad guys. His first terrible decision. That he ever made a vow like that. His second terrible decision, that he kept the vow. Because the Bible actually says, looking back on his life, there's provision in the Bible for breaking a dumb vow, a stupid, foolish vow, and he failed to follow it. So Jephthah's remembered in my heart as somebody, in fact, I'm quoting, as a pathetic picture of stupidity. So this is not me piling on a guy, right? Others agree. But if you're not in Hebrews 11, you'll just have to take my word for it. He is included in this list, the gallery of greats. For his faith. Whoa. even if you have a long-term developed theology about who God is, or if you're brand new, that is a mind blower. He really did that? Yeah, he really did that. He's really in it? Yeah, he's really in it. That's the kind of God that says, think me over again. If you're not used to that kind of thinking about me, it's true about me. We need to embrace that. I need to embrace that. So, inspired by these stories, I've looked forward to this epilogue, as I'm referring to it this morning, really since the beginning, because really for one kind of basic obvious reason. I've referred to this as the Hall of Fame. Some call it the Hall of Faith. I've called it the Gallery of the Greats, Gallery of Giants of the Faith, and on and on. And like most, let's just go with Hall of Fame for a minute. And pick any sport you want. And who makes it to the Hall of Fame? The best of the best, right? And the thing that I've noticed from the beginning in this study is that the Hall of Faith, the Hall of Fame according to faith, is that people, unlike the Hall of Fame where it's the best of the best, the Hall of Faith is the standard is much, much lower. Did I surprise you with that? In fact, it boils down to these people, every one of them inducted to the hall, and us too, requires faith and little more. Did you hear me say that? It requires faith and little more. The curator, if we can call the writer of Hebrews the curator of the hall, connects past inductees, which is Hebrews 11. 100% of them are from the Old Testament, with present people, present to the audience in the day he was writing. Hebrews was written in the first century. So he's drawing, for 9 months, we've drawn all this information from the Old Testament. That's him looking in the rearview mirror. And then he applies it to people that are his contemporaries in first century and to people like us. And that all comes together in chapter 12. If you're not there, would you turn to Hebrews chapter 12? And let's read three verses together and get a few things from this epilogue and then gather at the table. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. What we said earlier in prayer and in our worship time, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorned its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. All right. How could it be, if I'm correct in trying to draw you into this, that the people that made up this list in Hebrews 11 and the people he's writing and you and I have something in common? That is the potential to find our names in the list of Hebrews chapter 11. If I can stretch it and not have you go out and say, Pastor added a new verse to the Bible today, what would it look like if it said in verse 41 of Hebrews 11? By faith, Kevin. By faith, Pam. By faith, Barbara. By faith, Ken. Finish the sentence. Put your name in there. Am I reaching? I don't think so, not a bit. That's what the rest of this message is about. I love watching athletic events. The Olympics come to mind because they're sort of epic. And I love the awards ceremony where winners are on podiums. And If you noticed, it's intentional. They're at different levels. The middle podium, of course, is for the gold medalist, right? And it's fun to watch their, and I'm still glad this is part of the broadcast, because if it was just about the athletic competition, you didn't get to see this, I think we'd be cheated. Because in that moment, it's as though that achievement is sinking in. I'm the gold medalist. I won the gold in this event. And as they stand there, you can watch tears streaming down the faces of accomplished athletes, and usually it's during the time when the flag of their nation is being raised behind them and the anthem, their national anthem, is being played. I get chills every time I watch it, and it doesn't just have to be, oh, say, can you see kind of people. It can be anybody in the world, and sometimes it's even more touching when you know that the one, you know, their big Olympic entourage is two people or something from a country that, you know, it's just so cool. It's an incredible moment. And then, I don't know if you search this, you can do it with very little effort. Go and listen to some of their interviews with people that are saying, how did you do this? Remember the bobsled team from Jamaica? How'd you guys do that? I mean, you know, there's not a lot of snow in Jamaica, you know, right? I mean, how do you do that? And to hear them talk, whether it's the Olympics, or think of any other sport, a victory on the court. Right now, NBA game two today. You'll hear this in three more games because it'll be a sweep. But anyway, you're gonna hear people talk about what's this moment mean to you? How does this feel for you? It can be a champion on a field, a football field, or a soccer field. When that team wins, listen to what they say. It can be on the ice. The Stanley Cup's going on. That's the championship for ice hockey. If you're not into that, diamond, the baseball diamond. After like a 450 game season, it's finally over, and there's this. And listen to what they say. And I think you're going to hear some of what we just read with what they say. They will talk almost always about past champions. You're going to hear them say things about people that inspired them, past champions. The Bible starts out in chapter 12, what we just read. See such a great cloud of champions. That's what he's referring to. So the writer here is saying, hey, you know, I just got to tell you, hey, how'd you do it? How did they do it? Well, you know, how are we going to do it? Well, we point back to past champions. That's what chapter 11's meant to do, a great cloud of witnesses, people that have gone before and won. You'll listen a little longer, and you're going to hear them talk about something of the journey they've been on. See the words that verse 1 uses? Let us run with perseverance the race. Do you see that word, those two words, the race? The race comes from a very interesting Greek word that we transliterate, agony. It's the Greek word agon. That's what race is here. The author is saying, and these people are talking about this agony of effort. Fighting the fight of faith is an incredibly intense, epic struggle. And the Bible knows that. Every champion in any sport is going to talk about, man, this was one grueling season. We fought hard and we fought through it and we persevered. That gets me to the next one. Champions will often talk about perseverance required to run the agon, the agony of this race. Am I changing a paradigm for some of you already? I don't know how strongly this image lives on. But there was a day when people said, hey, you want to get to know Jesus? Just sign up with Jesus and it will be fun in the sun. It will be a picnic in the park. It will be what? And the cell talks about things like joy, peace, hope, triumph, pleasure. It's more of a cruise ship image. That who wouldn't want to sign up for, right? And this isn't always true, but sometimes those not so pleasant words in Luke 9, verse 23, aren't even mentioned. If anyone wants to come after me, let him get his swimsuit and join me on the cruise ship. No, deny himself, take up his cross daily. There's so much in that image. It's not good. It's not fun. And then do something that's so counterintuitive, unnatural for almost all of us. Follow me. Follow me. Because we are in the I generation. Got my phone to prove it. Right? So champions talk about the hard road, this race, the agon of the race. And they use words like, see, let us run with perseverance. See that big word there? Perseverance. It's the word for endurance. And the Bible talks about it a lot. And what's behind the word perseverance is it's hard. You don't need perseverance on a cruise ship, except to, you know, crowd in another meal because there's seven a day. I'm not kidding you. You don't need it. In fact, on purpose, it's meant to be pleasurable from start to finish. What does perseverance mean? Listen to this definition. The commitment to continue even when everything in you wants to slow down or give up. So these words, let us run with perseverance, overcome this instinct to slow down or give up, because it will be strong at times, won't it? Phooey, it's not worth it. So do you approach the race with that kind of determination? My observation today is that fewer and fewer do so. And have that determined commitment, that determined perseverance to stay at the struggle. I want you to hear these words from Paul in another place. In 1 Corinthians 9, he says this, in his view of the race, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as you get the prize. That's what you're after. Everyone who competes in the game goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. We do it to get a crown that will last for all of eternity. I found some fascinating information about the 23-time gold medal swimmer, Michael Phelps. You know him? Freakishly long arms. I mean, just ridiculous. Two features. I could tell you a ton of stuff because it's out there. It's fascinating. Fascinating to read about it. But one thing is a dream life. Do you know his daily, when he's training, his daily calorie intake? 12,000 calories of heavenly food. Okay? I'm not going to pick on food. Hey, you read the list. He gets bowls of ice cream. Not a bowl, not a cup. It's getting smaller and smaller in my home. He gets a ridiculous bowl, okay? Bowls, plural. And he gets steak, and he gets bacon. I almost kissed the lady at Costco this week that was sampling bacon. I said, you're a beautiful human being. Can I have seconds? You know, I mean, it's right? He gets that every day, and he's pounding it down. Dozens of eggs. It just goes, the list goes crazy. That's a, let's call that a dream, okay? Now, how about the training part? When he's in season, training starts at 6 o'clock in the morning. He swims. You're going to love this. He swims for 6 hours, which covers 8 miles, 6 days a week. Do that math. That's like from here to Salem swimming. All right? That's a lot. That's a nightmare, by the way. I don't, sheesh. a bath is long enough for me in water, okay? It's crazy. All right, so that's what's involved in this determination. That's the stuff. I think Phelps, I don't know anything about where he's at with Jesus, but I think he probably understood as an athlete a couple of things that show up next in our list in Hebrews 12. He knew a thing or two about overcoming obstacles. Do you see where it says, throw off everything that hinders? Let's stop there. Everything that hinders. Those things are not defined for us. We do know this from the context because the next thing up that you're supposed to throw off is sin. So let's call this stuff not necessarily sinful, but not so good for you. What would that be? Well, maybe you come home at the end of the day and you watch an hour of news. How's that working for you in the peace category, in the calm, in the joy? I've been news-free until like two nights ago, and it's like I fell off the wagon, and I watched some news, and I was just going, are you kidding me? And Debbie's in the kitchen going, honey, back on the wagon, brother. It's not smart. I'm a better human being. I got my eyes more on Jesus when I know less about this dark world we live in that's falling apart. If you think differently, talk to somebody else. You know, they'll be happy to. I'd love to hear your corrective input. But by the way, that's not bad. I'm not telling you if you watch news, shame on you, you sinful, you know, person. I'm just saying, how's it working? Is that working well for you? Here's one for you. Social media. When's the last time you went someplace and just didn't Facebook the world that you're, wow, you know, I don't know. Technology. You can game, but some people need to get a life. They game all the time. If you start neglecting your, you know, family, you're sinning. But you can game and just, you know, kind of go nowhere. So maybe that's something of these modern-day versions of throw off every hindrance, social media, technology, news. Those are just some relevant things in my life. I thought I'd throw them out there. But now we get to serious stuff, more serious anyway. And the sin, throw off every sin that so easily entangles us. Look at those words. Would you look at those words in verse 1? Notice the small definite article, the. You see? And throw off the sin. He's talking about a specific sin. The whole context here is what? What one word? Faith, right? Everything in this whole passage is about faith. So the sin is speaking of something that's the kryptonite to faith. What would that be? Unbelief. It would be the stuff of, I doubt. I'm not sure it's going to work out. So question, do you doubt? Hebrews 11:6, without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he rewards, he will reward. Those words, he rewards. Do you doubt those? That's the sin that he's talking about here. When you pray a long time for a situation to change and it doesn't change, when you pray for that prodigal in your family, somebody that's way off the path, and you're pleading with God and you're saying, God, do something in this situation, bring them back, and it hasn't happened and it seems stuck. What do you do with that? You start to doubt? James said this about doubt. When you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave in the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person does not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person, in fact, is double-minded and unstable in all that they do. I think that's the sin that we're supposed to look for, watch out for. And in our efforts to be one of these, verse 41, realize that that's the threat to us being inducted here. Very real threat. Want to believe. Remember, that's all they had in common. They believed God. Does doubt threaten your future induction? It does mine. One more method that champions, I think they talk about when they are interviewed about their season. What just happened? Tell us how'd you do this, all that. This is my favorite one. Make sure they would talk about a hero. Make sure you have a hero. A person that stands out to you that you study and you seek to emulate. Think of your world. Think of you as a mom. You want to be the best mom in the world. You've got game, but you need more. You need that extra thing. I suggest to you that principle works here. Find a woman that you can study, another mother, and emulate. If you're a husband, you want to be the best husband or father, or you find somebody that did it right or is doing it right, and you lock in on them. That's good stuff. And it's encouraged throughout this passage. You study their methods. You look at their techniques. You want to be a great preacher. I mean, I was probably embarrassing at times as I sat there and studied people like my dad and Swindoll, and just, you know, my mouth just hung open as I was, and I learned how they laughed and their cadence and their interaction and their movement and or lack of movement. I just watched it all. So I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be good at that. So their discipline. How do you do that? Tell me what your week's like. The whole package is in play. I want to know that. You want to be a great quarterback? Study Tom Brady. And deflate the ball. So I had to say that. Just a joke. Okay, it's just a joke. Come on, it was proven. Okay, so anyway. So in this agony of a race, right? Agon, the race. We're told that there is a hero. And his name, of course, is Jesus. That's why it says in verse 2, fix your eyes on Jesus. Fix your eyes on somebody that did it right. He's the ultimate example of winning. He's the one, others can say it, but it's beneath ultimate, that they could say, it is finished. I did it. He modeled what it means to endure opposition by sinners. And to see beyond the struggle, and it's recorded. His stuff is recorded, and he did it. Do you notice these words? Fix your eyes on Jesus, who had his eyes fixed. Where? Do you see what comes up next? For the joy set before him. Jesus, how'd you do it? I had my eyes on the joy. What joy? After the cross. Tell me more. When I'm home with my dad. When I rise from the dead. That's the stuff after the agon. So what's it take to slow you down? By the way, all of this has a very practical outcome. Look how verse 3 ends. Please do this. It's a very powerful expression in the original language. It's called a purpose clause. See, it's introduced by two words, so that. Everything that's just been presented in verses 1 to 3 wraps up with this. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners. That's Jesus. Consider him. Study him. Watch his every move. Learn all you can from him. So that the purpose for studying him is told in the finishing of this sentence, that you will not grow weary or lose heart. What makes you want to grow weary? What makes you want to give up? Is it a certain resistance? There's a lot of it out there, isn't there? There's stuff that just pulls at us. Is it discouragement, long seasons of discouragement for you? How about, is it the devil? Came to steal, kill, and destroy. That's pretty big opposition. Don't lose sight of Jesus. Fix your eyes on him. And at the finish, after you've watched and studied and stared at him, see if you don't find your name among the faithful. And to that end, communion is a perfect place to wrap up a message about one that is our hero, who fought and finished and wants us to fully embrace the joy as well. Would you bow your heads with me as servers come to join me? And we're going to bring you the bread and cup. Those are the parts that never change about communion. But every single communion is different because it's a time where you get to sit and think and say, are my eyes on you, Jesus? Am I giving up on the race? Wow, agon, that's a different word I hadn't really thought. It is true. It's a hard race, really grueling at times. But I see you hung in there, Jesus. It couldn't have been more grueling for anybody, any of us, for me for sure, than what Jesus did. So in that sense, communion's different every time we share in it. The bread and the cup remind you and I of the agon, really, of Jesus. He finished the race, and when he uttered those words, they're three beautiful words, but they're expressed in that final moment of torture, where Jesus beaten and whipped beyond recognition. Accomplished the salvation of all people who will bow to him. If you've not bowed to Jesus, please don't wait. Don't put that off as some sort of, oh yeah, forgot. That's core and foundational to everything. What does bow mean? You just say, Jesus, you won the race. You won the game. You won the battle. You were victorious for me. You came to seek and to save the lost. Has he found you? If he hasn't, now's the time to say, Jesus, save me. We sang about it earlier. Make it real to you if you haven't. And then share in the bread and the cup as we take communion and thank him. Lord, we love you. Thank you for being the author and finisher of the faith. I pray for people that have not even begun the journey that this would happen now. I pray for those of us that have begun the journey at some time earlier that we would be renewed in our persevering pursuits of you in a race where we won't give up. We love you, God. Bless these moments now in Jesus' name.